and Human Services, the Joint Ways and Means Committee. This is February 24, 2016. It's 9 a.m. in the morning. Sorry for the delay. We've been working out some last-minute issues. I would like to have Elifo make a comment, and I want to make a few comments, too, before we get started.
Mr. Kocher, I'm not sure what comment I'm supposed to make.
Oh, I thought you wanted to say something.
I know frequently I do.
There's two people I defer to in my life regularly. One is LFO, the other is my wife. So I find that just works better if I do that. Members of the committee, I first want to thank you for being here all through this short session. It's been seems like it's been 6 months. It's been less than 6 weeks. Most of us stopped getting phone calls at 10:30 last night about bills, and I started getting them again this morning at 6. So it's been pretty wild. I do want to make one comment. Other members of this committee may want to join in or may not want to join in. Something has happened during the session that in my 16 years up here plus I have not seen before. I've been through maybe 20 sessions, counting special sessions. Members of the lobby have been coming to us at the very end of the time a bill should have been discussed, trying to sow confusion. They've been half-truths, sometimes outright lies, trying to kill a bill. I'm very disappointed in lobbying members that have done this, and I've actually got a list of 4 or 5 of you out there. This is disingenuous. This billing runs on integrity. If you can't have any integrity and try to come in and kill bills that way, the system won't work well. In fact, ultimately, you won't be listened to anymore. There's two lobbyists out here who I'm going to have a conversation with after this session that I will not listen to anymore. They've lied to me on several occasions, and other members have been telling me the same thing in other committees. So this practice of coming at the last minute, trying to kill a bill by being disingenuous, by lying about the bill, by trying to confuse people, is something we would like to see stop. At least I would. I'm only speaking for myself. I don't know how other members in this committee feel, except for one other who's had the same exact problem, nothing but in this committee, but in other committees too. If you think you can continue to do this, I don't believe you're going to be successful. And I'm very disappointed in the lobby having done this. And those of you out there who've done this know who I'm talking to. And those of you who have been honest and straightforward with us, I hope you understand I'm not talking to you. So I'll stop there. Got off my high horse. And it sort of settled things from my point of view. As a public announcement, Senate Bill 1505, which is the pharmacy benefit bill, is going to go to capital construction. You have until 2 o'clock this afternoon to come to agreement with that bill, and then capital construction will take it from there. So we'll go forward now and start our work sessions for this morning. This, of course, is our last meeting. And again, members, I thank you for your patience and working so hard on a very short schedule. So we will open a work session on Senate Bill 1515 relating to child welfare.
Mr. Co-Chair, members of the subcommittee, so in OLIS before you today is an LFO recommendation memo, a fiscal impact statement OLIS, and there's also an amendment to the bill. This bill came out of the Senate Committee on Human Services and Early Childhood. It involves DHS's authority and practices around the regulation and oversight of child caring agencies. These are provider agencies that offer an array of services to child welfare, youth, and families. There had been some instances, I think, in last year that caused some concern in this arena, and I think the interim committee worked a lot to try and figure out a plan to help resolve some of the issues. The bill requires the department to do some work and provide some quarterly reporting back to the legislature. There's also a review of the cost and feasibility of national accreditation and work to try to figure out what a center of continuous improvement would look like to help provide technical assistance and other program benefits to the child caring agencies. The bill does have a fiscal impact, which is why it's at Ways and Means. The fiscal for the current biennium is $369,031 general fund and about $900,000 total funds and 4 positions. There are 3 positions that would go within the Department of Human Services to improve licensing oversight as well as provide some investigation services, and the position of the Department of Justice would be an investigator to help DHS in pursuing issues around these child caring agencies. So the amendment that's before you today simply adds the funding to support that work in the bill. When you see this, assuming you pass it, when you see it in the full committee, you'll have a budget report to look at as well. LFO recommends that the A amendment's approved.
Can you give me a...
Yes, Mr. Co-Chair, I move the dash A 8 amendment.
It's been moved that we accept the dash A 8 amendments. Any discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, the A8s are moved.
Mr. Chair, I move that Senate Bill 1515 to the, be moved to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation as amended.
It's been moved that Senate Bill 1515 as amended be moved to the full Ways and Means. Any discussion? Okay, I'll take ladies first.
Okay, thank you. I think we're probably going to say something quite similar because we have enormous respect for the person who brought this forward, Senator Gelsner, who has worked really hard. I know Representative Stark has also worked really hard on this issue and really gotten at some things that we are long overlooked, and Senator Gelsner really dug into this, and I'm wholeheartedly supportive of this effort. Couple things going into the future. One is that I hope that she uses her enormous investigative skills and to look into other areas of concern that have not been on the front page in the newspaper. We know with the memory care has come up, and that bill looks like it hasn't made it through the session. It was brought forward by Representative McEwen, but it's a big issue, and I look forward to have talked with Senator Gelsner about looking at that issue as well. And then secondly, with regard to this particular issue in therapeutic foster care, I do want to make sure that we look at all the foster care, the residential as well, and that in the future, and I know we've talked about working on this together, that we look at increasing the reimbursement rates and providing technical assistance and looking at certification for DHS workers, which most of the private providers also have. So there's a lot more work to do in this. I'm really looking forward to working with Senator Gelsner because I don't know anyone out there besides perhaps my colleague here who is as passionate and as serious and as effective about these issues.
Representative Stark.
Thank you, Chairson. I, too, just wanted to give props to Senator Gelsner. This has been absolutely incredible watching her work on this. And even when we were on our trip to China, she was digging into the emails through this. I mean, it was like every half hour, she's like, hey, Stark, look at this, you know. And so anyway, I'm just incredibly impressed with your work. Thank you for your relentless efforts.
Were the emails in Chinese, or?
She even learned Chinese to get this done.
Representative Nace.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I join everyone else who's been very concerned about the well-being and safety of the children who are in our care or custody. Sometimes passing more laws and more rules isn't enough. Sometimes the issue was enforcing the laws that we already have in place to make sure that procedures are followed. If we audit something and there's a report that would have indicated something was amiss, what did we do with that report? Did we just put it in a drawer, whether it's a file drawer or a virtual drawer in an email box? What are we doing with the information we're receiving? We do a lot of audits. We ask a lot of our providers, our very excellent providers, to go through a lot of hoops and spend a lot of time processing paper and processing reports. And then for those few times when it would have been necessary, when something would have been revealed, if someone had been paying attention, did we even pay attention to take action for the child? I think the situation is more complex than just passing more laws. I'm really happy to do what we need to do to close loopholes, to make sure that children and adults are safe. But we also need to make sure that we're monitoring appropriately and take action as soon as we know something needs additional care. We can't continue to say we solved the problem because we put more words in the book. It's let our actions speak. Let's take care of the people who are the most vulnerable.
Thank you. Representative Stark.
Thank you, Chair. wanted to just kind of respond to that a little bit. A couple other things, you know, for the public that we are doing that I'm excited about. One is House Bill 4080, which becomes a home for all these reports. It's on the Senate side right now. I'm trusting that they are going to keep that moving. And so these reports
the commission,
it doesn't just sit on a shelf or go in a drawer. It actually is before a commission to keep pushing on those things. And also, you know, I've been quite impressed with the steps taken right currently by Interim Director Clyde Psyche to actually respond and deal with any cultural issues that we are seeing in there. So I think that we're definitely on the right track here. But yeah, a lot of work still to be done.
Thank you. I wanted that my previous statement to stand alone because I feel so strongly about it. But I also wanted to raise the issue that we're putting additional requirements now on providers. And it was my hope that we could find a way to help them spread the word, do training among themselves, anything that they are need to know about, understand, do differently. We haven't addressed that yet. I think we might need to look at that. It's hard to ask someone to do something if they don't know what it is yet that they're supposed to be doing differently.
So, Chair, I just want to echo that, and that is what I was trying to get at, maybe not quite as eloquently as you. Those are the things that Senator Gelser and I have talked about, making sure we come. So there's the part about holding people accountable at this end, but there's also the how do you help people provide quality before you get to this part. So we have a big commitment to work on that.
Thank you.
No. Senator Gels, would you come to the podium, please, and introduce yourself?
Thank you. Co-Chair Bates, Co-Chair Nathanson, and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Sarah Gelser. I'm the state senator from Albany and Corvallis and the chair of the Senate Human Services Committee. And I just wanted to clarify, in the bill, we actually have not put any new requirements on providers in the bill. The new requirements are on the Department of Human Services to do exactly what the good co-chair has said. One of the really key pieces that's in here is that when those reports go into a drawer and investigations aren't followed up on, that becomes a criminal official misconduct. So as you go through the bill, there actually are no new regulations at all for the providers. And what's incredibly important in the bill is that Center for Continuous Improvement that we really need to bring forward to kind of a peer-driven, provider-driven organization to improve the quality across the board, because we've got great providers who are the experts in providing these services. And we need to listen when they tell us that they need higher reimbursement rates and look at foster care isn't just about a warm bed and a warm meal. Keeping kids safe isn't enough. We need to look at the outcomes we want to achieve, and that costs money. It's not free. So I just really want to thank the co-chair for her comments. It's incredibly important, and I think this bill will help the department be more accountable to the children in its care.
Thank you for your comments. Any questions for Senator Gelser? Any further comments from the committee? Seeing not any opposition, what a surprise. Okay. We'll close the work session. Senate Bill 1515. We'll send it to full Ways and Means with due pass recommendation. Representative Nathanson, would you be kind enough to carry it in full for us?
Sure.
Thank you. Senator Gelser, I assume you want to carry it in the floor?
Yes, please.
Okay. On the floor of the House, it's your decision, but I got a hunch who wants to carry it.
Oh, I'd love to.
Okay. Is that okay with you, Representative Nathanson?
Yes.
Good. One down. Okay.
Close the work session.
I think I did close the work session.
Yeah,
I did.
Yeah. Excellent.
I'm going to open a work session on 4017 relating to health care. Beware of wide relating clauses.
Yeah, no kidding.
But sometimes they really work nicely for us, too.
Yeah, we're on 4017.
Yeah, we're on 4017.
Switch gears.
And we're in work session. Is Oxley here? And just to make an announcement, is Gary Oxley in the room? Good, you'll be on, just be standing by, okay? Yes.
Okay. Co-Chair Bates, members of the subcommittee, House Bill 4017 comes to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means with the A engrossed version.
The bill directs the Department of Consumer Business Services, in collaboration with the Oregon Health Authority and in consultation with stakeholder advisory group, to develop and present to the interim committees of the legislature a blueprint for a basic health program as defined in the Code of Federal Regulations. That blueprint needs to, they need to include that blueprint in a report to the interim committees of the Legislative Assembly no later than December 31st of 2016. The bill details the components of the basic health program, including requiring the basic health plan blueprint to include dental care coverage for adults. The bill requires DCBS and OHA to convene a stakeholder advisory group that includes advocates for low-income individuals and families, consumers of health care. The group must also include representatives of health care provider groups and the insurance industry. The bill directs DCBS to obtain as needed updates of the data produced in the feasibility study required by Section 1, Chapter 96 of Oregon Laws of 2014, which is in Old House Bill 4109 from 2014. The bill designates DCBS as the sole state agency authorized to request a state innovation waiver under the Affordable Care Act. The bill also requires DCBS to convene an advisory group to assist in identifying permissible federal provisions that would be waived in order to improve the delivery of quality health care in Oregon. The bill requires DCBS to present its recommendations for submitting a waiver to the legislature by March 1st, 2017, and before the department submits the waiver to the federal government. I do want to make a little correction on what I just read. I do not believe that the A. Engross version of the bill requires the basic health plan blueprint to include dental care coverage for adults. The bill also allows a registered nurse employed by an education service district or a local public health authority to provide nursing services at public or private schools to accept an order from a physician or a doctor of osteopathy in another state if the order is related to the care and treatment of a student that's been enrolled in the school for less than 90 days. The Department of Consumer and Business Services originally estimated the fiscal impact of the bill to be between $395,000 and $595,000, but was subsequently able to refine that estimate down to $415,000, and that amount would allow DCBS to update the 2014 basic health plan analysis with 2016 qualified health plan enrollment data, new recommendations from the 2015 basic health plan stakeholder work group, and updated assumptions reflecting the basic health plan experience in other states and qualified health plan enrollment data. It would also provide analysis of the effect of the individual health plan risk pool as a result of the basic health plan creation. They'd be able to complete actuary reports for both the basic health plan blueprint and for the 1332 waiver analysis, including 10-year projected deficit neutral plans. So there are a number of amendments for the bill on OLIS for you, including the A9, the A13, and the A15. And we'd like to, we can go through those one at a time, or I can give you the.
Well, what I'd like to do is have a discussion of the base bill first, if there's anyone wants to ask any questions. Then I want to move to the A9s. Once we have a motion for them, we will have a discussion about the A12s, but we won't have a motion for them. Then we'll have a motion with the 13s and the 15, which is a limitation. Is that
that sounds acceptable?
Great. So first off, questions about the base bill. This is the most complex bill we're going to have today, and we're going to spend a little time on it. We do have to be out every 10:30. Questions? Representative Boone.
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Chair. I just was listening to our staff person roll through this, and I thought I heard you say, did you delete, does this delete dental care?
No, it includes dental care.
No.
It does. It does not include.
I would have someone who sponsored the bill come forward, please. No rush up here now. introduce yourself to the committee, please,
yes,
and give us your knowledge about the dental part of this bill.
Mr. Co-Chair, members of the subcommittee, for the record, John Mullen with the Oregon Law Center. When we had a stakeholder design process following the last legislative session, Chair Greenlee came to the group and asked that the basic health discussion fit within a framework of affordability. And so as the stakeholder group moved through the discussion, reluctantly said, we have to drop adult dental out of this to make it work. What happened during this session Representative Hayden on the House Health Committee introduced the Dash 7 amendments, which removed the language out of the bill that said that dental would be considered separately and presented as an option. So it's really kind of an interesting thing because the dental discussion doesn't show up in the engrossed bill, but it was taken care of by the Dash 7 amendments. So the challenge to the group going forward will be making sure that we look at all components, including adult dental, and look at the affordability of the final product.
Thank you for your testimony. So the point you're trying to make is, as far as the study is concerned, dental is going to be discussed in this bill.
Yes.
Does that answer your question?
Well, sort of, but I just want to say that I strongly support dental being considered, because the last I checked, your teeth are part of your body, just like the TBI issue, your brain's part of your body, right, and shouldn't be separate. It's medical, it's there, and it can affect you physically. If you have bad teeth, you can have heart problems, et cetera. I mean, I'm not a doctor, but there are two over here.
Oh, Mr. Co-Chair, Representative Boone, just to say, underscore, advocates were totally in that particular position. It was the cost issue. I think Representative Kenny Geyer can comment on that.
Thank you. So I think the idea was that we wanted a study that would show what it would cost without the dental to begin with, because this population, when they buy their plan, their silver plan, the dental is also not included. We are not looking at taking away dental coverage for people that used to have it. In fact, they don't have it unless they buy supplemental as well. So what the bill originally said was, we're going to leave out dental because we're trying to make it cost neutral, and here's how we think we can do it. With the amendment, what we said is, we want to see what dental would cost, but we don't want to change the whole nature of it, where now we're coming up with a blueprint that has to mandatorily cover dental, because we're worried that that would reduce other benefits or reduce provider payments even more. It would change the formula a lot. So we want to see what a basic health plan would be without dental and with dental.
So it is legislative intent that this is part of the discussion going forward for basic health.
Yes,
but two separate issues, and both to be costed.
Yes, Mr. Coach.
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry.
A quick follow-up. Then, so make sure when you do this investigation that you include potential leaving dental out and potential increases because of that in health care after the fact.
That's exactly right.
Representative Nathanson, did you have a comment?
No, I did, Mr. Chair.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Thank you. I'm very supportive of this bill and the intent of this bill. The one thing I would say is I'm a little worried about the prescriptive nature of the bill, and that the price tag, because of so many elements being detailed in the bill, is going to come back kind of astronomically. And I hope that one of the things that the proponents of this bill will do is work with DCBS to clarify what the goal is, rather than the exact elements that need to be in the plan. Mm-hmm. And I hope that DCBS will work closely to try to present alternatives. I don't know if this bill gives them the flexibility to do that, but I'm really worried that by being super prescriptive about what has to be in it, rather than talking about the intent, we may end up with something that is completely unfeasible and not have an alternative. So,
Mr. Kutcher, I could comment very briefly on that, if you like.
If you'll be brief.
Okay, just to say that the original bill was more prescriptive about taking the recommendations from the stakeholder group. In the bill now, it says consider. So there's a laundry list of things that we will consider, but it's less prescriptive than originally drafted.
I'll just tell you, I share some of her concerns. I did a rough estimate on it. What it might cost the state, and depending what comes back, it could be as much as $50 million a biennium, depending how you look at this. And that's a very rough look at it, depending on how you come back with recommendations. So this could be expensive, depending on what you come up with. Representative Kenny Geyer.
Thank you. Thank you for allowing some discussion. I know this is the most complicated bill, but I just want to say it was hard to put all of the intent of it into the bill language, but I do want to put on the record that what you are asking for, Representative Steiner Hayward, is very much in the report by the stakeholder group, what the principles and what the intentions are, and then various ways to get at it.
Thank you.
The proof of the pudding is in the eating. We'll see what you come back with, okay?
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair.
I would entertain a motion for the A9 amendments.
Would you like me to tell you what they do?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, I know what they do. I'm getting ahead of you.
That's all right.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee, the A9 amendments to the bill change the reporting frequency for the report required by Section 3, Chapter 575, Oregon Laws of 2015. That was enrolled House or Senate Bill 231 from 2015. This change is so that instead of a single report due no later than February 1st of 2016, a report would be required each year until the repeal date of that section, which is extended by the bill to January 2nd of 2020. That report details proportion of medical expenses allocated to primary care by carriers, coordinated care organizations, Public Employees Benefit Board, and the Oregon Educated Benefit Board, and also how those entities pay for that primary care. There's no additional fiscal impact associated or anticipated due to the adoption of the A9 amendment.
Senator Starney here with you.
Thank you very much, and thank you for the clear statement, Mr. Stamer, about this. Many of you will remember a bill that we passed last year relating to trying to figure out how to bolster primary care in Oregon. Because of extensive studies, both in the United States and internationally, that show that when you have a more robust primary care system, people are healthier and it costs less, which are goals that I think all of us agree on. And one of the ways to think about that is to have some kind of a standard definition of what primary care really is, and then to understand whether the commercial insurers are actually supporting primary care by focusing more resources in that direction. We got the first report back this year. It shows a wide variability among the various commercial insurers. We think there's a lot more work to do, and having this report on an annual basis will help us figure out some paths forward, working collaboratively with the insurance companies, with businesses that self-insure, and frankly, all the CCOs are setting a really good model for this because they're significantly increasing the proportion of their premium, essentially, that's going toward primary care. So this gives us an opportunity to work collaboratively and see whether we're making some progress in increasing the percentage of spend that's going toward primary care and thus towards the things that help people stay healthy. So thank you very much for including this amendment.
We have a motion.
Yes. A motion on
A9.
The A9 first. Yeah, I move to adopt the A9 amendment for House Bill 4017.
We have a motion to adopt the A9 amendments to House Bill 4017. Any further discussions? Seeing none. Any objections? Seeing none. So moved. Give us the A12 amendments. No, we're not. Can I go ahead and bring them up and discuss it without having to move the motion?
Feel free. That's the discretion.
I'm going to ask Mr. Watt to come up and Mr. Oxley to come up. Don't sit too close to each other.
We aren't enemies.
So let me explain what's going on for those in the audience that are interested. And basically, we have a situation, and Senator Steiner Haywood may need to help me here. And this is about getting prescriptions filled. Basically, what happens when you go to the pharmacy, tech gives you prescriptions, talks about them, done, and away you go. There's been a question of how many of those, when they get filled, actually get picked up by the patient. I understand that number can be kind of low initially and have to be put back on the shelf and brought back out. I've never personally ever done that, and I'm lying. Okay. The other issue from the physician's point of view is that when that kind of a problem occurs and the patient doesn't get their prescription filled or gets a duplicate prescription, it's picked up by the local pharmacist. I get a phone call, not a problem. Frankly, local pharmacists, Savon, Fred Meyers, my independent pharmacists are not a problem. The real problem is the mail-in pharmacies, which keep sending prescriptions in even though we tell them to stop them. Patients show up in the office with two or three prescriptions, some of which have been stopped and replaced by something else. They're taking both. It's a real serious problem. The board is trying to get to both of these issues, and they have put a requirement out that the local pharmacist contact all refill prescriptions prior to the person coming to the pharmacy. It is an impossible task to do that, even if you try emails and phone calls. Lord knows where they go to, and it's just not going to work well for the local pharmacists. But I understand the problem. It needs to be resolved. June 1st, a requirement goes into place to do that. I don't think it's workable. I think clearly it's not. But there's still that problem that needs to be resolved. The agreement is that the 812 amendments have said you can't do that for the next roughly 18 months into January 1st of 2018. Are not going to be moved today. And an agreement has been reached. The board will not enforce that issue until March 1st of 2017. And during that time, they'll work out a different plan with the local pharmacist, and something would work for mail-in also. So that's the basis of the agreement we have today, and I want everyone to publicly agree to it. I'm not going to put you under oath. They do in some committees. I want you both to step up here and tell me you agree to it and you understand it, and that you're going to go forward with the work group amongst yourself and fix this thing.
Mr. Chairman, Madam Co-Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Gary Oxley, Oxley & Associates, appearing before you on behalf of Fred Meyer and Rite Aid. I am more than eager to work with my new best friend, Mark, on resolving the differences we have on this particular issue.
Co-Chair Bates, Co-Chair Nathanson, committee members, my name is Marcus Watt. I'm the Executive Director of the Board of Pharmacy, and we are committed to find resolution to this. We will start scheduling meetings to get together all the constituents so we can identify what the issues are and try to craft a response that meets everyone's needs.
Mark, you agree that you will not enforce that, I guess you'd call it in your case an order, until March 1st, 2017.
That would be correct. We've already pushed it back once. I don't think one more time will be the end of the world.
I think we got everybody's attention this time. Okay. Thank you both. It was one of those things in the hallway. I appreciate it. Whoop, don't move.
Mr. Co-Chair, I just want to reiterate my thanks for the conversation. I don't want a bunch of more busy work. I want solutions that solve real problems, not just create a bunch of hoo-ha that really doesn't solve what needs to be solved.
Thank you, Representative Nathanson.
That's what you're going to do. Okay.
Thank you.
I'm good with that solution.
Is everybody good? Thank you. And thank you for your time. Did you talk to us about the 813s?
Certainly, Mr. Co-Chair and members of the subcommittee. The A13 amendment to the bill amends statute to define routine health care and exempt from that definition certain activities related to approved clinical trials. The bill prohibits the discrimination by coordinated care organizations against members on the basis of the member participating in approved clinical trial and limits the liability of the coordinated care organizations for any adverse effects of the approved clinical trials. There's no additional fiscal impact that's anticipated due to the adoption of the A13 amendment, and the LFO recommends the adoption.
Mr. Co-Chair,
yes.
May I make a motion? I move to adopt the -A13 amendment to House Bill 4017.
It has been moved that we adopt the A13 amendments to House Bill 4017. Any discussion? I'll just take a moment and thank everybody for very quickly coming together with this. I got my last phone call on it. My staffer, Julia, did the work for us. Thank you. From Coho this morning at 7:30 or 8 o'clock. Everyone's in agreement on this now, so we should be okay and ready to roll. Any other discussion? Any opposition? Seeing none, A13s are adopted, House Bill 4017.
Thank you. Co-Chair Bates, members of the subcommittee, your final LFO recommended amendment creates an other funds expenditure limitation increase for the Department of Consumer Business Services in the amount of $415,000 to carry out the requirements of the bill.
Mr. Collins? Chair, I'd like to move the LFO recommendation to adopt the -A15 amendment to House Bill 4017.
We have a motion to adopt the A15 limitation motion to House Bill 4017. Any discussion? Seeing none, any objection? Seeing none, so moved. And the final.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 4017 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation as amended.
We have a motion to move House Bill 4017 to the full Ways and Means Committee as amended with a due pass recommendation. Any further discussion? Representative Starr.
Mr. Chair, despite my good colleague next to me, her very persuasive arguments on this bill, my own comprehension of the complexities of this bill is limited at the moment, and so I'm going to be a no at this point in time.
I'm hoping, you know, I've already talked to John. He's going to come talk to me so I can understand better what we are actually doing with this bill. And so there's a good chance I might change my vote on the floor, but for today, I'm going to be a no going forward.
Any other objections? Seeing none, so moved. To record, Senator Stark is, Representative Stark is a no vote.
Yes.
Now
you
I'll.
You got to carry yours to the full.
Oh, sorry.
Floor.
You want me to carry it full?
Sure.
I probably should.
Yeah.
Is that okay with you?
And to the floor.
I'll carry it on. I'll carry both. I'll carry it on the floor too. It's fairly complex, and I know it pretty well. On the House side,
is it Representative Greenwald?
Representative Guy, whose bill is it?
Well, I was on the task force.
It has some others.
Who's on that?
Yeah.
Probably not me.
It's a committee.
Does Representative Greenwood have a stake in this?
I don't know. Does Representative Greenwood involve in this?
Was Representative Greenwood involved?
We'll
get back to you within.
How about we have? Yeah, we'll get
I'll
back.
Check.
We'll give it to Kenny Geyer right now, Representative Kenny Geyer, and you
and
can co-chair
wants to take
with,
him
they can work it out. Okay, but we have to have somebody's name on for now. Well, thank you. Okay. All right. So I'll now open a. Did I close that work session? I think I did. Now we'll open a work session on House Bill 4071.
Okay.
Co-Chair Bates, members of the subcommittee, House Bill 4071 establishes a financial assistance program to pay for the premium cost of qualified health plans and the out-of-pocket expenses for the coverage provided under those plans for certain individuals residing in Oregon under a compact of free association with income of less than 138% of the federal poverty guidelines. The program is to be administered by the Department of Consumer and Business Services with advice in the development, implementation, and operation of the program from an advisory committee appointed by DCBS as required by the bill. DCBS was directed by House Bill 2522 in 2015 to develop recommendations for the creation of a premium assistance program for low-income COFA Islanders. Those recommendations were published in November of this year of 2015 by DCBS, and they're actually on OLIS for you to take a look at. Those recommendations included a maximum cost estimate by DCBS of $1,823,000 per year, assuming 1,500 program participants. This includes $221,000 per year for program administration. The bill creates the COFA Premium Assistance Program Fund and appropriates $1,823,000 general fund to be deposited in that fund for operation of the Premium Assistance Program by DCBS. There's one amendment to the bill that's recommended by LFO, and that's the Dash 2. And the Dash 2 amendment adds a $1,823,000 other funds limitation to the Department of Consumer and Business Services for expenditure of those funds, so the money's out of the COFA Premium Assistance Fund established by the bill. It also makes a small technical adjustment to the language, the appropriation language of the COFA Premium Assistance Fund. The purpose of this is that although the bill appropriates the general fund to the fund, to the expenditure of the fund, there's a technical accounting issue with the state that the general fund is expended into another fund's account, and then to expend the money out of the other fund's account, the agency needs this other fund's expenditure limitation.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Would you like a motion to adopt the Dash A2 amendment?
I would. Just two. Dash 2.
The Dash 2. Yes, thank you. I move to adopt the Dash 2 amendment.
We have a motion to adopt the Dash 2 amendments to House Bill 4071. Any objection? Any discussion? Seeing none, so moved.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 4071 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation as amended.
We have a motion to move House Bill 4071 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. I'm listening for somebody to say something. If he doesn't, I will.
I'm pleased.
Thanks. I'm pleased.
We're making some history today. Yeah.
It's really cool. Yeah. I'm very excited. We've been working on this a long time.
This shows that we can do things in a bipartisan way. I want to especially call out Representative Olson for the hard work he's done on this since our last session. He took this under his wing and is a bit like a dog on a bone getting it done. And I appreciate that. Sometimes you need a champion to push something through for you. Well, the rest of us were supportive. You've done a great job, Representative Olson. Well, I do appreciate you on this.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Doc Bates.
These are very... thank you.
It's been interesting.
These are very special people who worked with us in World War II. Were never given full citizenship, as they should have been. You could actually say we nuked these people. We had nuclear testing on their territories, a lot of nuclear testing. Though most of you aren't old enough to remember this, Senator Olson may. We actually had nuclear testing in these islands above ground. It was amazing what we did, and they still suffer from that. So I appreciate what's happened, and my father, who was a veteran of the Pacific War, if he were still alive, would appreciate it too. He came back with fond memories of people from Micronesia, the Marshall Islands, New Guinea, and the Philippines. So it's the least we can do for you. Thank you for your sacrifices. I wish you were full citizens, as you should be. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I agree, and it's the right thing to do, and I've heard that we may be hearing more from this group. So
I will look forward
to
that.
But not now. Let's get this
not
done.
Not this morning. So... any further comments? Objections to the bill? Seeing none, so moved. And we'll need carriers. And we'll need somebody in full. We'll need somebody on the floors.
I'm happy to do it in full.
Want to do it in full?
Yes.
And on the floor, is anybody on the Senate side besides myself who was deeply involved with this bill?
I was last year more.
Jackie Winters was.
Yeah.
That's right, she was, but she's not going to be here. I'll take it on the floor then.
Okay. I'll choose me on the House floor.
Yeah, I thought you'd come over to the Senate floor and carry the floor. That seemed appropriate to me. Okay, you got your carriers then?
That's it.
Okay, thank you. So that work session is closed in 4071. We're going to open a work session in 4042 relating to general assistance. No?
Let's unwind the work session.
Excuse me. Open a public hearing on House Bill 4042. We have not had a public hearing. We have to go through a public hearing first. Sorry.
So, Mr. Co-Chair, members of the committee, today there's a couple people here to kind of fill you in on this bill real briefly. As they come up to talk to you, I think what you'll hear is during the long session you had a report on a general assistance study that was done. And the recommendations out of that study are pretty consistent with what's in the bill before you today.
Introduce yourself to the committee, please, and give your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair.
Remember, you can talk us out of this if you talk too long.
Okay. Fair enough. Mr. Co-Chair, members of the committee, for the record, John Mullen with the Oregon Law Center. And in connection with the comments the co-chair just made, this is a group that doesn't need a tutorial about the general assistance program. You're all very familiar with it. I just will say very, very briefly, it's been 10 years since there has been funding for this population. The need has not gone away. We have worked diligently with many of you over the years to try to come up with a way to work with this population. And again, this is a population that is very, very low income. Many people have no income at all, and they're unable to work for a year or better, single and childless couples. We see these folks all around the state. What we did with the study that you approved in 2014 is we took a look at a number of different options, and this is the one we landed on, about working with people on the presumptive Medicaid caseload, and Erica will talk a little bit about that in a moment, and people who are homeless. So we're working with the ones that are most difficult to serve and using a housing first model. This is going to be difficult, but it's really working in important ways with a population that's very vulnerable. If I may, I just want to just thank all of you for your commitment, and I want to thank Chair Kenny Geyer from the House Committee and also co-chair Representative Stark. We had a unanimous vote out of the committee, and we have had bipartisan support all along for general assistance going back to the days Representative Boone and Representative Olson were on the Human Services Committee. So with that, I also want to thank all of the people that are supporters. You'll see information on OLIS, every group from AARP Oregon to Welcome Home, the GA Committee, and last and not least, I want to thank the Department of Human Services and Erica specifically for working so closely with us on this project. Thank you very much.
Co-Chair Bates, Co-Chair Nathanson, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Erica Miller. I'm a program manager with the Department of Human Services, Aging and People with Disabilities Collaborative Disability Determination Unit. Thank you for the opportunity to talk with you today about House Bill 4042. The department is neutral on this bill. I will skip the history portion that I was going to provide, as John has mentioned, that you're all very familiar with general assistance. House Bill 4042 would create a small general assistance project. It would differ from the department's past GA programs in its scope and in its benefit structure. In addition to a small cash benefit, House Bill 4042's GA program would provide housing and utility assistance to up to 200 individuals per month with severe disabilities who are experiencing homelessness. Like the department's previous program, the department would provide professional level assistance with the Social Security application and appeals process, and benefits received would be reimbursable when individuals were awarded SSI benefits. House Bill 4042 would also require the department to convene an advisory group composed of stakeholders, allowing us to develop metrics collaboratively and to routinely evaluate program success. The Dash 3 amendments require the department to compile a list of attorneys that could be used by program participants when appealing unfavorable Social Security decisions, and prescribe that the advisory group should be appointed and the project shall begin no later than July 1st of 2016. It also appropriates funds to the department. The department is currently assisting presumptive Medicaid recipients with the Social Security application and appeals process. Representative Co-Chair Nathanson requested a map that shows where our disability analysts are currently located, as these staff would also assist general assistance project participants. I believe the map has been posted on OLIS, but I do have copies here as well if you need them. Thank you again for the opportunity to testify today on House Bill 4042, and I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have for the department.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I've got to say thank you to both John and Erica. This is a much better bill than we've had in the past, and I hope that the department's neutrality on this is just because they're not supposed to take a stand, but I'm hoping that what we would really translate that into a strong support. And I'd like to give a great shout-out to John. All the years you've been working on this, your perseverance, and in a very unusual move, I'd like to add an amendment from the dais here to anoint him Saint John. He is a wonderful, wonderful man.
Was that no way.
So, would you reintroduce yourself, please? You need to reintroduce yourself now.
Oh, okay. Mr. Co-Chair, I don't think I'll use the title that was just bestowed.
He's in contempt. Move on.
I think he's a little pink.
He's also blushing. Representative Stark.
Thank you, Mr. Chair Bates. I wanted to add one piece of history between last session and this session. Last session, this bill passed out of our policy committee. However, there were a few no votes because there was what we felt was an expensive study. One of the critiques of that bill at that time was, we already know that this is a good program. We don't need to spend that money on that study. So I had hoped that the bill would have made it to us here in Ways and Means, and then we could have taken that off, but it didn't make it that far. So I appreciate John's endurance to bring it back without that and get broad support.
Senator Steyer here.
I would just first of all like to echo everything Representative Boone said about Mr. Mullen. He's been a staunch supporter of this, and he's been one of the people I've worked with the most closely ever since I came in 3 weeks before our first constitutional short session in 2012. He's also the source of one of my favorite quotes of all time about short session, which is, I had a great month last week. The point I would make about this, and I think, frankly, many of us have had this experience. I've worked closely with people I've known personally and with people in my practice who are just on the edge of making it. And with just a little bit of extra help, whether it's that first and last month's rent, or it's that security deposit, they can just get into housing. They can keep themselves there. If they can just get that little extra to tide them over for a couple of months until they finish their certificate program so they can get a higher paying job, just those little tiny bits for people who wouldn't otherwise qualify for TANF will make a huge difference in helping people on the path to self-sufficiency, which is the goal that all of us strive for. And I'm very grateful also to Mr. Mullen and all the other advocates, because there are many who've worked so hard on this to get this back. And I appreciate the Department of Human Services' work in advance for the work that you're going to do setting this up and the work you've already done helping get this bill ready. So you've got a love fest going on here. We love this bill. It's great. And it's going to meet the goals of the state to get people on their own feet with very minimal government assistance.
Thank you.
I just ditto to all the comments, and I hope this is a start, and I hope we can actually build on it in the future. And yes to St. John.
So I'll make a, because we are a Ways and Means Committee, I do want to make a comment here. This, to a great degree, is a revolving account. We're going to put money into it to seed it for the first year. Some of that, not all of it, some of that money will come back, and we can continue this on and on and on. We're going to have to keep feeding a little bit of it, because sometimes they don't get their disability, there's administrative costs, but for the most part, we can make this a revolving account. There will be a push in 17-19 when money gets tight to look at this program. So let us all remember that this is a revolving account, it's a minimal amount of money, and it's one of the things that is the best job I could think of to help people get through their disability, get their disability money coming in, get qualified for Medicare, and stay off the streets. So from that point of view, from just a Ways and Means point of view, it's a great thing we should be doing. And it got stripped out during the Great Recession. It's one of those things that happened. So I appreciate you bringing it back.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to thank you for providing the map. In the discussion in my office, one of the things that was going through my mind is often programs like this, as some people envision, oh, it's just about the big metropolitan area, the one huge one up north, or, oh, it's just about two or three big cities where this problem is, and that's not the case. We're trying to help people anywhere, really, in Oregon, but my concern was, but if we have the people who know how to process this, how to provide this kind of help, if the expertise really exists only, for example, in the Portland metro area or somewhere else, we're not going to start spreading this benefit around the state and helping many communities. So the map really does illustrate how this will be spread in different areas around the state. I think it will be interesting to discover it's not a large enough sample, the number of persons who will be helped in this program, but with this as a sample, it will be interesting to note, are there any patterns that evolve with differences of the kind of help that's most often needed in one community versus another? It may help us tailor other programs. Information we learn from this one may be useful in other ways. Thank you.
Well put. Thank you. Any further discussion? Seeing none, we need a motion.
To close public hearing.
Oh, that's where we're public hearing. Close public hearing on House Bill 4042 and open a work session on House Bill 4042. Thank you for reminding me.
Mr. Co-Chair, members of the subcommittee, so there's also a memo in OLIS, a recommendation memo from the Legislative Fiscal Office. I think you heard a description of the program, and in my memo, as Senator Bates pointed out, this is a program that will recover some of the money spent via the repayment from the federal government from when people become eligible for benefits. There is a fiscal impact in the current biennium, about $1.6 million general fund. That's to get the program going. And there's three staff positions at DHS that will work with the program. Those costs will be higher in the next biennium, but we'll also start to see some of those recoveries come in that will help pay for the program. As Ms. Miller talked to me about, there is a -3 amendment that's being recommended. It adds the charge of making a list of attorneys to the advisory group, clarifies that a group gets appointed by July 1, 2016, also sets a clear program start date of July 1, 2016, and adds an e-clause and adds the funding to get the program going.
Thank you.
I have a question for Ms. Byerly.
Sure.
It's because I haven't pulled up, here it is. I'm going to try to get the fiscal impact statement pulled up. It mentions three positions. That's full-time?
Yes. Madam Co-Chair and members of the committee, there are two permanent positions. There's a human specialist, a service specialist one, and an office specialist two. They will be working directly with the clients in obtaining housing by working with local community action agencies. Again, it's not only figure out who could benefit from the program, and then figure out where you're going to put them, where you're going to place them, what service you're going to provide. And there's also an accounting position that will help track the whole payment recovery in and out side of the program.
I was sort of interested to think about what the staffing would be for the agency, because it seems like perhaps the bulk of the work is really being done in the community by partners. And I had been thinking, so why did we need that many in DHS? But we're trying to coordinate so many different things. I can understand it for now, but it also makes me wonder if we were to be able to provide this assistance to more persons, would there still be some capacity left with that staffing to provide assistance to more, or is this sort of maxed out, like you max out a workload, and then you just have to scale it up proportionally?
Madam Co-Chair, members of the committee, I didn't go back and do any research on what kind of department support there was with the prior program that was old, but my sense is it's not necessarily, this isn't like for every 200 people you have to have three staff. My sense is the staffing would allow for some capacity. Part of that may depend on really where the services end up being provided. As you noted about sort of the geographical placement of the disability analysts, and maybe that as the program evolves, there ends up being some pockets where this is working really well because of the local infrastructure in place to help with these clients. So I think you're going to hear more about it as the program has been running. Certainly in the session, there should be some information on kind of how things are going that may frame sort of what the next steps might be.
Great.
And just to add, I think you are going to find that to be the case. I think the Representative Nason's brought a good point forward. On the ground for what these services might be different in Eugene or Medford or Portland, and the local caseworkers there can help us out with that. The part that's going to be unique for this program is the financial recovery, and you'll have to have somebody at the state level who can help with that, because what normally happens is you apply for disability, it may be 12, 14, 18 months before you get it. You get a lump sum payment from the time you applied, the lump sum payment. That comes back to the state as part of the revolving fund. But you'll need some expertise to handle that. That's something that local people probably can't and shouldn't do. So I would expect if you have 200, if your caseload is 200 people and you're tracking this money, that as that grows, you may have to have more people to help you out do that.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, would you like a motion
to
move the amendment?
I certainly would.
I move the -3 amendment to House Bill 4042.
We have a motion to accept the -3 amendment to House Bill 4042. Any discussion? Any objections? Seeing none. We have moved the -3 amendment.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 4042 to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation as amended.
We have a motion to move House Bill 4042 as amended to the full Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, so moved. Now we need carriers.
I would love to do it, but I would also love to invite my co-vice chair,
thanks, John,
to be co-carrier with me.
In the house.
Okay.
Who do you want to bring it to full?
Senator Starter here, would you like to do that?
Entirely at your discretion, Mr. Chair. Happy to.
Well, I think you've worked in parts of this, haven't you?
Yes, I have.
I think that would be appropriate then.
Thank you.
You know, and she will carry it in the floor also, of the Senate. Okay. So our work is almost done here. I want to take a moment to personally thank my staffer, Julia McFadden, for putting up with me the last few days. I was a little curt once in a while. But we had about 20 balls in the air at the same time, and she made sure I didn't drop them. Julia, I thank you for your great work this session, not only putting up with me, but the hard work you did of tracking everything, keeping us on what we're supposed to be getting done, and not losing anything, which I lost several times. So thank you very much for a great job. Well done. Well done.
And Mr. Co-Chair, I'd like to express appreciation for our collaboration as co-chairs. It's been really fast and furious the last few days, or the last month's worth of activity compressed into a week, as has been described. I really appreciated being able to work together as co-chairs, and want to thank all the members of the committee for needing to process a whole lot in a vast amount of time.
Thank you. It's very kind. And I'd also say that this committee, unlike some others, we respect each other's opinions. We listen to each other, no matter what is behind our name, a D or an R. And that is not always what I've seen happening in this building, especially this short session. So I appreciate everybody doing what they've done. And I also mention that I really miss Senator Winters not being here. Mm-hmm. Her wise counsel is always welcome. I know she's recovering nicely and doing well at home. I look forward to seeing her back here in 17 and maybe doing some work group work with her in the next few months. But she just needs a little more time to recover, and I think she'll do well. Any comments from any committee members? Representative Boone.
Thank you. And I'd like to say that, you know, this is our last meeting and everything, but this was my first back on Ways and Means as I was in Representative Nathanson's position as vice chair back in the day in 2005. And I've always said, don't put me on until this time, and the speaker said, no, I really need you on this. And I'm really glad she did, and it's been a pleasure to work with all of you too. And to have two medical professionals on the committee is pretty amazing. So thank you so much.
You're welcome. Senator, Representative Olson.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator.
He really wants you to go do that on the Senate floor.
Really
he
just
wants you to introduce
him. Honestly, this is the first time for me.
We got a desk that says Senator Olson. I can just sit right there and do it, you know.
Spelled differently.
Spelled the wrong way.
Olson with an O.
Olson with an E.
Yeah, I get it.
Andy
all right.
Allen.
Yeah, I know. Okay, I'm done talking.
No.
Just the... No, honestly, this is the first time for me. I mean, this is my 12th year here because Representative Boone and I came into this together. But first time for me in Ways and Means on a sub. And it's something that I've really enjoyed doing because I really love human services. It's been interesting to learn more about what OHA is all about as a process. But it's been fun to work with both of you. You've been great. And I do enjoy being on a committee where... there isn't this all of the time, and I've been pretty fortunate and blessed because judiciary has been that way for me too, and God bless the marijuana committee.
He likes sitting by us too. So.
2 out of 3 ain't bad.
I'll just study. Add in quickly as well, this is a really fulfilling committee for me, both the people on it, the leadership, the ability, since I'm on health committee and human services and housing, to see issues all the way through, to see amendments and bills mm-hmm. continually get improved, is very, very fulfilling. And I really respect the people that bring health and human service backgrounds. So it's a great honor to serve on this committee. And to be with senators who I don't have an opportunity to work with directly outside of this committee.
Thank you.
Okay. Representative Stark.
Everybody wants to say.
I'm going to finish the House first. Representative Stark, you have any comments? Good comment.
Short and sweet because it's
Senator
after 10.
Senator Steinhaber.
Yeah, we're good to go.
I'll go with what he said, with a particular thanks to our co-chairs, from whom I continue to learn an enormous amount about process and policy and collaboration. And I'm very grateful to both of you for all the opportunities and education you've afforded me in my 5 years on this subcommittee.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Thank you all for your service. I really do appreciate it. And we are not only adjourned for today, we are adjourned for this session.
Wow.
Thank you.
Yay.